For November the 5th, 2021, we talk about Unpacking, House of Ashes, and Space Lords. Welcome to Level 392. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Rocking it 3 style tonight. How's it going, David?
I'm doing all right. Bobbing and weaving.
Of course. So I
just posted to our Slack some pictures of me from Halloween.
I had a good
time with that.
Nice.
So the local like artist commune, Low Mill, did a kind of an event, and that was a lot of fun, you know, costume contest and, you know, vendors and things like that. And then on Sunday, we set up, neighbors have one of those inflatable movie screens, so set that up in the front yard and watched Ghostbusters.
Nice.
The only problem is we were set up for trick-or-treating and didn't have a trick-or-treaters show up.
Oh, so you had a bunch of candy laying around.
This sounds like the best case scenario.
Well, I don't know. I have never actually lived someplace where I've had trick-or-treaters visit, so I was kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We did give some to the next door neighbor for his kids, and gave some to the mailman that happened to drive by.
Cool.
Not sure what the mailman was doing at like 8 or 9 at night, but he got some candy.
He probably had Jala's copy of Metroid Dread.
I was gonna say it was a Halloween costume.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, that's cool. How about you, Dennis?
I've been doing good. I've been popping ibuprofen like it was candy today, though. We did all the Halloween antics and yada yada. The whole family dressed up as bats. That was fun. but it's always the stupidest thing, right? I just bent over to pick Barrett up, and little son of a gun's getting heavy at 11 months, and was just like,
"Oh, you screamed! Oh, you pulled it!"
My back is completely thrown out right now.
Oh no.
Funny thing though, I tried to explain it to Barrett that like it really is not advantageous for me to be picking you up right now. And he was really insensitive about it. Like I feel like I was not getting through to him at all. I don't know. I feel like I need to instill in him a more conscientiousness for others, more respect. Because he was not hearing it.
What did he do? Did he call you a pussy? Like, this is what, an 18-month-year-old?
Intentionally throwing stuff on the ground so I would have to pick it up from his high chair.
Okay. No,
babies that want to be picked up are not very much fun.
Yeah.
When you've hurt your back.
Oh, so I'm
living that dream right now. But like I said, any amount of ibuprofen will help.
Yeah.
So I'm just deferring that pain until I wake up in the morning.
Do you find that ibuprofen works? I might as well just sing a little song about telling headaches to go away when I take ibuprofen.
For headaches, I actually agree. For like back and other muscle pain stuff, like I had, weirdly enough, I had toothaches that it was super effective for.
Yeah.
And like I said, the back pain, it's good for. God, this is like a podcast of 80-year-olds.
No, it's fine.
Or maybe
fine.
I'm just 80-year-old.
No, keep going.
Old.
Yeah.
Yeah. But headaches are a no-go for me, specifically sinus headaches that ibuprofen doesn't help with.
No, nothing like headaches, body aches. Pretty much it's like, okay, if I'm worried about my kidneys, I won't take the ibuprofen and I'll take the acetaminophen. If I'm worried about my liver, I won't take the acetaminophen. I'll take the ibuprofen. But it's all basically as effective. It works for fevers. Doesn't work for pain. But then again, I don't know. I might just be, what I'm concluding is that just anesthetic or any kind of analgesic doesn't work on me. Cause when I had that root canal, the numbing didn't work at all. I felt everything. No matter how much he did. Yeah. And then, And I was thinking back, like I had an endoscopy, you know, where they stick a camera down your throat. When I was like an early teen, something like that, 10, 11, 12, something around there. And I woke up in the middle of that. And like started fighting off the doctors. And when I got my root canal, I woke up during that. So I think that stuff just doesn't work. And so maybe the ibuprofen not working is related to that.
Yeah, I think you've discovered the worst superpower.
Try as you might. How many darts will it take?
You're immune to pain? No, I'm immune to painkillers.
Yeah. No, I am. I feel pain like an SOB, man.
Real good. Empathy, man.
Wow, I'm really sorry Oh, go ahead.
I was deciding how dark I wanted to make this. I was going to say, most of the Midwest being immune to painkillers basically makes you immortal at this point.
I mean, actuarially, yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, I'm really sorry that your back is hurting. Are you going to have a chance to rest it at all, or is it you're just keeping on going?
I was thinking I'll sit still for a couple of hours right now, and that'll help.
Yeah, that'll probably help. Yeah.
If you guys can find a way to make that work. I know we usually do these podcasts while running around our houses.
Yeah,
it'll keep the energy up, you know.
Yeah, I think maybe I don't know if we can do 2 hours, maybe 90 minutes, something like that.
Okay,
with three of us, you know.
And then just order me to change positions.
Yeah. I don't have too much happening here. Honestly, it's just been me rediscovering, like, stopping and watching things. Decided to start a comfort rewatch of Twin Peaks, but nobody wants to hear me talk about Twin Peaks because everything that's ever been it's necessary to say about Twin Peaks has been said. But it's been fun sitting down with the Blu-ray.
The series and the coverage is complete.
Yes, yeah, it's all there. I honestly, just,
that doesn't feel very Breaking Bad adjacent. I feel like you got to find Breaking Bad-y stuff.
Prestige television, prestige dramas. Something there. Yeah. No, I just I wanted to rewatch the third season because I'd only ever seen it once, and I was like, I'll just watch the first two as well. I've got them all right here. But yeah,
some freaky stuff, dude.
Yeah, freaky good stuff. Well, that's all the that's the banter we dispatched with that in record time. So I want to talk about video games. So why don't we jump in with that and do the regular kind of show? What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, how about you? You've been away the longest.
Yeah, so I've just been continuing on with some Warframe, although I actually have some new stuff.
Okay.
So I went through and unlocked the Railjack, which is the basically your combat ship for the new I don't know how you'd describe these. Basically, there's a new game mode where it's a team of four people piloting a starship, you know, fighting against other ships.
Okay.
I guess maybe that's obvious, yeah, as opposed to, I don't know what else you'd fight against. Anyways, yeah, so you have to go through a mission to basically... You get contacted by this old AI, and he sends you to collect a Old War era ship, which the Old War is kind of the, in effect, the thing that led to the before times not being the now times.
Okay. Just a cataclysmic conflict changed all the habitable worlds and stuff like that.
Yeah, and this whole thing is going to be tons of spoilers. Like, your character fought in the Old War, but you don't have any memory of it.
Okay.
David, it can't be spoilers if you don't understand it.
I mean, sure. I'm understanding it. I just don't have context for it.
On the subject of not understanding it, you get all the parts together and, you know, rebuild them, spend a ton of resources, all that stuff, and end up with all you have left is the reactor, which is apparently powered by quote unquote the reliquary.
Okay.
And, you know, it ends up, you go back and activate the reliquary, and that whole thing's weird because your AI can't see the reliquary. So his whole strategy of figuring out where to go is sending you places that he doesn't know where they are.
He's navigating by negative space.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, ultimately, shenanigans ensue, and you end up, and apparently your ship's reactor is powered by a giant severed index finger.
Okay.
That's kind of floating in this vat. And also, the index finger is apparently the index finger of your character, except that if you check, your character definitely still has an index finger.
Okay.
So it's maybe some sort of, like, I don't know, negative reality version of your character.
Okay, so if it's like a dark matter kind of thing, maybe it's powered by the annihilation energy, something like that, maybe?
Yeah, it's not clear. All that I know is that you activate the reliquary and a ginormous finger starts tapping on the glass, and then your character appears sitting on top of the reliquary, except his eyes are kind of glowing and he's down a finger. It's very weird.
Huh. I mean, it sounds like alternate dimension or time travel kind of stuff.
Yeah, like these, you know, generally speaking, they eventually explain all of the crazy stuff that happens, but, you know, it often gets weirder before it gets less weird.
Yeah. No, I got this. Like, you know the animes where, like, the swordsman, like, unsheathes their sword just a little bit and suddenly they flash to the other side and the person's cut, but yeah, they just look surprised. And then you see the swordsman move through them or the slash move through them. That's what happened. Your finger was cut off so fast that you just had to catch up.
That could be.
A ship powered by Yato.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would entirely be consistent with this game's theme. So, yeah, I can see that. So then the actual game play itself is pretty fun. The team's broken up into one pilot and then up to two turret gunners. And then there's also, if you take too much damage, you'll get fires and hull breaches. So you'll have to, you know, go and put those out. I guess that's maybe a good way to say it. This is kind of like a third-person shooter version of FTL.
Oh, that's cool. So you're keeping the ship going as it's completing its mission.
Right, exactly. You sometimes have to repel boarders, so they'll, you know, shoot kind of boarding pods that latch onto your ships.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also actually leave the ship, and you've got these sort of what they call arc wings, which are kind of like jetpack space suits things.
Okay.
And so you can go and simply, you know, shoot it out at enemies that way. And that's notably important because a number of the missions will actually have segments that are on foot. So you'll have to leave the ship and, for example, infiltrate a capital ship and sabotage its reactors, say.
Okay.
So that explodes because it's, you know, got some sort of shield that your ship-based weapons can't punch through.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. So, you'll have scenarios where things like, say, half the crew is running around inside the capital ship, activating, you know, external vents that then the people still on the ship have to, shoot the vents, causing the capital ship to start exploding, so the people inside the capital ship then need to race to the exit.
Okay.
So yeah, so long story short, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of the standard Warframe-esque. Everything's customizable and upgradable, all your different ship parts. You have a new set of perks. You can actually recruit an NPC crew.
Hmm.
And so if you want to play solo, they can fill in for you.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, this sounds a little bit like they saw, there are some fun parts about, Sea of Thieves. Is kind of what it sounds like a little bit, and they decided how can we work that angle into this, and it sounds successful.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I think the other thing is the Arc Wings have actually been in the game for years. That part of the combat has actually been around for a while, but it was pretty universally despised. So okay. I think this is partially also kind of revamping that into a game that people actually like playing.
Nice.
That's been revamped a couple times, though, right?
I think so. Honestly, I don't know a great deal just because, like, I avoided that part of the game like the plague.
It amazes me how many games are in this game.
Yeah. It's... it continues to be pretty dang crazy.
Yeah. Did you ever play there was the console Star Wars Battlefront? Either one or two. That was a simple version of this, it sounds like, but I really liked those missions where it was specifically the boarding party kind of stuff, and also defending the Star Destroyer, defending the cruiser or what have you. And trying to keep the reactors online, like that is a badass thing in sci-fi to me. And anything that gives you a chance to do that, like that was even like a little bit the case in Tribes 2 or Starseed's Tribes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that was like base kind of stuff, but you were keeping systems online and keeping sensors and up. I don't know, like just that complication added on to kind of a regular capture the flag or kill everybody kind of thing.
There's some deep human compulsion that any starship big enough must be destroyed from the inside.
Yes.
Oh yeah, of course.
100%.
So the other thing that's really cool is, the game continues to be very beautiful, and that combined with their very much maximalist approach to design really pays off here.
Okay.
So the Orkin, which are the kind of the precursor race, basically their design is this sort of, their architecture is this kind of massive, ornate sort of Art Nouveau style architecture, everything, gilded and, ivory and, those sorts of things. And one of the things, I guess, the developers or the game engine or whatever you want to say does really well is most of the tile sets, but in particular that one, are just vast. There's whole things where, rooms, these, throwaway procedurally generated hallways will have like vaulted ceilings that are like, I don't know, 100 feet tall.
Yeah.
And, often in those, if you want, you can, go and like parkour up the walls and, there'll be like a crate or a chest or something up there that, generally speaking, it's not, if you're going for like, how can I farm stuff as quickly as possible, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're going for, like, I want to explore this thing and, you know, get some reward for doing so, it definitely has that. And so in this version now, there's things where one of the coolest things I've seen so far is one of the kind of on-foot dungeons was basically the Corpus are the hyper-capitalistic, you know, technologically advanced enemies. You know, sort of technologically advanced, but in the very, like, blocky approach to, you know, ship design, that sort of thing.
Brutal, efficient kind of deal. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so one of the dungeons is basically where one of their, like, science slash, you know, engineering ships has kind of latched on to the side of a Orcan ruin that's floating out in space and basically, like, drilled into the walls. So it starts out, you're, you know, busting in the airlock of this ship, you know, fighting through through the ship, you know, all the troops that are there to, you know, kind of, you know, take whatever scrap or whatever they can from this ruin. Then, you know, getting to where they've busted through the wall of the ruin, and the tile set immediately changes to this, you know, over the top, you know, Art Nouveau, you know, style thing, except it's got, you know, sprinkled around all of the various engineering equipment they are using to kind of document and research, you know, these ruins. And there's things like there's a place where basically you'll come in and there's like this huge, I don't know what you'd call it, almost like a greenhouse dome, you know, looking out to space, you know, seeing the asteroids and things like that float by. And so the point being, just the whole thing is very, very cool.
I've always, you know, when I think of Warframe, I think of, like, it's an impressive game, but mostly because it moves really well, like, better than you would expect a multiplayer game like that to move. But to hear them nailing the environments like that is cool too.
So that's been a lot of fun. I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, neat stuff to it.
There's a lot of game in that game.
There is a ton of game in that game.
Nice.
It is so, like, I played it a little bit back in the day. It is so intimidating to think about going back just because I like the expansion upon expansion, new thing upon new thing. Like, the beginner experience has to just be buried under layers of arcane shit that are impassable.
So I think there's a couple of things that kind of mitigate that. You know, one, they have a very strong, you know, it's almost like the way it's set up, there's the sort of core progression game, which is what's called the star chart, which is, you know, basically, you know, working your way through the planets and asteroids, things like that. And, you know, that's sort of the, that's to a significant degree kind of the core game loop. You know, that's where, like, you're doing those things, you'll never reach enemies that are powerful enough that any given strategy isn't viable. You know, type of thing. So that would, you know, in like a Bloodborne, that would be kind of the, you know, the base game. And then what they've done is most of the stuff they've built on top of that is either, you know, end games that are added to that, that are, you know, are definitely progressions in terms of difficulty, but not direct progressions in terms of, I don't know, storyline, or, you know, kind of that sort of thing. And then also, you know, most of the story advances after that are basically a series of primary missions that they've released, and those were all very, very cinematic. And so I guess the point I'm making is it's kind of a thing. There's a very defined primary path that, you know, by the time you're done with it, you're very good at the game. And then you kind of get to the point where, you know, it's kind of the training wheels are off. You know, you can get as ludicrously overpowered as you want, but at the same time, the enemies also will just get, you know, massive, you know, scale up massively quickly.
Yeah, and surprise, you're playing Tetris or FTL or Among Us suddenly.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, yeah.
Nice. Did you have anything else, David?
No, that's all I really had.
Cool. Warframe. I'm going to do mine because I have two new ones.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
I have nothing new and exciting, so
okay.
I will defer.
All right. You shouldn't have told me that. That way I would save time for you, and then I would end, and you would say nothing, and then we would end early. This probably won't be too terribly long, because both of these are spoilable games, but I want to talk about them because they're both interesting in their own way. So this past weekend, I started streaming the third of the Dark Picture anthology games by Supermassive. These are the people who made Until Dawn and the previous games in these series. I have streamed both of those. The first one being Man of Medan, the one that is kind of set on a seemingly haunted ship.
Okay, I was going to ask about that if you didn't say it.
Yes, and Little Hope, where a group of college students are caught in a foggy town in the Northeast, up in New England.
Silent Hill.
Yeah, it's pretty Silent Hilly, but it has some like witch trial stuff going on, and some like it's unclear like what time period certain things are happening in.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I remember that second one kind of having a bit of a wet fart ending.
Yeah, the second one was real strong right up until they took the most obvious, the most obvious cliche kind of ending that they could, based on what came before.
Obvious wrong choice they could.
Yeah, yeah. In order to like rob the previous proceedings of all of their, basically they pulled an it's all just a dream kind of thing. I don't feel bad. I don't feel terrible for spoiling a 4-hour game. I think if people go into it with their expectations, maybe they can brace themselves for this not to come together as well.
Their expectations being have no expectations.
I mean, expect cool monster designs and fun, tense action scenes and stuff like that. Like these people do good work. It's just each of these after Until Dawn has been a little slipshod, right?
So should they expect redemption from this third one?
I don't know. I haven't finished it yet. So this third one is called House of Ashes. And I'm going to say its premise, and it's going to sound like I'm joking, but I'm not. And it is as big of a, like, let's say as big of a reach as you would think it would be. It takes place in 2003 in Iraq. Okay. You are playing as, the majority of the people that you're playing as, because all of these, you split control, between a handful of different characters, U.S. military forces who are going into, this temple. You're looking for, you're out on a mission looking for a hidden silo, where your satellite intel says Saddam is, hiding his chemical weapons.
We know how that ends up.
Well, I mean,
2003, not 2023. I don't. My mind revised it to 2023. I'm
trying to make it make sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, this takes place during Desert Storm 2. Okay. This is War on Terror kind of stuff.
I follow now.
Yeah, most of your people are
War on Terror.
I know, right? most of the people are American, but you also play as, and this is something that is pretty new. Maybe I'm not playing like a lot of military games or what have you, but this is the first game that I have played where you play as a sympathetically portrayed member of the Iraqi armed services. Saddam's regime just fell. And this is a character named Salim, who, you know, is just like living his life. He was conscripted into the army and it's his son's birthday and he brought him a gift, and the Americans sweep in and he's brought in this mission. Everybody ends up, it's not a silo, it's a submerged, it's a subterranean temple. That was built like when Iraq was Sumeria and Akkadia and stuff like that.
Okay.
And there are these demons who are flying about and infecting people and turning them. And they're mostly indestructible and they look kind of like gargoyles, and they're chasing after you. And you have to try and figure out how to survive while you're kind of walking in the footsteps of this expedition that came here from Britain in the 1940s, shortly after World War II. And they kind of suffered the same fate. So you're also kind of learning what happened to them and trying to avoid it. This is like the, you know, like Until Dawn and like those previous games. This is a horror game that is like a cinematic adventure game. This is like David Cage games, like Fahrenheit, like Heavy Rain, but without the pretension. Like, this really leans into being campy and schlocky in a way that really helps,
mm-hmm.
you know, and streaming it. And this has been the case for literally all of these, but like everybody's reaction when they're watching it is like, I hate all these characters. I wish they would die.
Have I got good news for you?
And, I mean, that's kind of their thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and Until Dawn, and like eventually I came to like some of the characters in Until Dawn, but like a slasher movie, you know, some of the people you're supposed to like root for them to die. And in this, you're making enough like dialogue choices going, you know, going around, either leaning into their worst impulses, you know, to make them as despicable as you can. And, you know, usually by provoking people that will end up getting them killed, or you're trying to like make them a better person, right? You know, just having their eye on the prize and being genre savvy and trying to stay alive, right? But like, it's never really bothered me to have a cast of characters in all of these at the start that is just kind of like, oh yeah, all these people are kind of dog shit. Like, I, all of them annoy me, but I can steer them and I can, you know, do a little fist pump when this guy, you know, falls and gets impaled on a spike or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But because this is so cinematic and because it's so story focused, like, I don't want to say what happened to me. And also, this branches enough, you know, there are so many points where somebody could die or somebody will end up with somebody else, that like what I say, you know, it might not happen to you if you play it. So like, part of this is you're playing with other people or you're playing with yourself, and getting a different kind of experience every time, depending on like which QTEs you pass and such. But like, I don't know, this is good. And I am not swayed, let's say, at least so far. It could really take a shit in the back third, right? But I, you know, right now I'm just kind of like, yeah, no, I will continue to play one of these a year, every year as they have been coming out, because this is like a size and scope and quality of a product, that is, pretty rare, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like a good, fun way to kill a couple, you know, to kill a couple of evenings playing this super goofy, you know, horror movie. And this one, like, so far they have not really biffed or messed up the like the setting and stuff. Like, yeah, it's kind of goofy, but I don't know, we're getting pretty far out from the second Iraq war. I guess it's still kind of going on technically or what have you. We're getting out from that period of time, and so media is going to start depicting it, and we might as well. Yeah.
That my mind immediately, as you were describing the setting, jumped to 6 days in Fallujah.
Yeah,
which, you know, blew up and people freaked out, and now it's, I think it, I looked it up, it's coming out in December now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of this weird delay of a game that I think now there's no way it could live up to its hype, or
I
just don't see how it could succeed. It's weird that, you know, this kind of game comes out, and I don't know if it's that they go crazy wacky with it,
mm-hmm.
That it sits better with people.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
I mean, so like, it's funny, like 6 days in Fallujah still leaves kind of a sour taste in my mouth when I think about it, because it is purporting to be a realistic depiction of things. This is so, I mean, you don't spend any time in theater, really. You're not going from street to street dealing with civilians and stuff like that, or dealing with, you know, guerrilla fighters. It pretty much very quickly gets into the temple and you're fighting the gargoyle demons or what have you, you know?
Okay.
And like, yeah. As much as the politics and stuff come up, you know, questions about the war, like you have the...
God damn it, Dottie. Stop it.
Sorry. Dottie's like scratching at something.
Are you being attacked by a demon?
Yeah. Like the most place where it comes up is you have Salim, right? And you have, you know, representing the Iraqi side, and you have like all of the characters are a little bit uneasy trusting their lives with, you know, somebody from quote unquote the enemy. You know, the enemy up there, everybody's together down here, right?
Right,
but you've got one character who, like, when every character is introduced, they have a couple of different kind of traits saying like, hey, this is their starting point. This is just a, you know, regular soldier kind of guy, is Marine, but one of his is I think it's like prejudiced or something like that, and he'll say some just crazy ignorant jingoistic bullshit, right? And you can decide if you're playing as him to lean into it. You can decide if you are somebody, you know, alongside him to say, hey, put that away. And like, he ends up getting teamed up with Salim, and they end up kind of, you know, talking it through. And, you know, this is probably a spoiler, you know, I don't want to say it's a spoiler, because it's kind of, you know, like the way you would expect it to go is like by working and surviving together, they, you know, Jason kind of comes to respect, you know, gets kind of a different outlook if you play your cards right, which is good and satisfying. Yeah.
I wonder, to your point on multiple playthroughs and getting different results from different choices, if you lean hard into making them as antagonistic towards each other as possible, does the game actually allow you to avoid any kind of reconciliation or mutual understanding there? Or are they always kind of on railroads to understanding each other?
Right. I mean, it'd be pretty bleak if it ended up being like, yeah, no, they don't make up. Both of them die very early on, and Jason says a whole bunch of ethnic slurs. Like, I'm not sure if they would let that happen. He stops short of saying any ethnic slurs, but he does, you know, paint with a really broad brush when he is speaking about the people.
They make it clear this is the kind of guy who says ethnic slurs.
Yeah, who would, and people, you know, react uncomfortably when he is saying the things that he's saying. Well, yeah,
I like the idea that whoever you play the least shittiest becomes the protagonist of the story, who actually survives. Like the game is reading you for, okay, which one of these shitheads do you want to keep alive? We'll make them more lovable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have no idea. And something that ends up being the case when you're playing a game like this, you know, your Heavy Rain alike or whatever, is what role are you playing as, you know, the player, right? Because like, yeah, you are directing a character, if you are moving them around a place, then you are, you know, navigating. It's like walking around a video game level and picking what they interact with. If you're in a conversation, you're picking their choice. Well, you know, either between two options of what to say or to say nothing, you know, silence is an option, like in The Walking Dead. You're making all of these choices, and then, you know, the question is, and something that I kind of go back and forth on is, are you playing as the actor? Are you playing as that character? Like, are you role playing, or are you playing as the director trying to tell the version of the story that you want to tell? Are you trying to tell the version where these two people from different worlds see eye to eye, or do you want to, you know, say something bleaker about these circumstances? Do you want these characters who were romantically involved but are estranged, do you want them to make up or not, right? Like, you kind of like flip back and forth between a number of those different roles, and that tension is really interesting to me.
It's really interesting in the context of a game where we are so trained to think like, okay, there's a win condition here, there is a optimal path. And so in addition to like, okay, am I role playing what I would do? Am I role playing the character? Am I role playing the director? What's the most interesting choice? Mm-hmm. There's also the layer of what is the winning choice for this game. You know, which, I know that's not the right way to play this, but I think it's kind of baked into the premise of a game a little bit, just from where they came from, which is really funny. There's like this four-way tug of war going on for which dialogue choice to choose.
Yeah, success, it seems, would necessarily entail getting as many people out of the situation alive. But if it's a matter of like telling the most interesting story, I mean, if I sat down and watched a horror movie where there were no grisly deaths from characters that I got, you know, kind of invested in, either wishing them dead or wishing them ill, I'd be pretty disappointed, you know.
did you know the director of Downton Abbey was furious because that was his objective? Downton Abbey was meant to be a horror movie where everyone just made better choices. And no one got it. He was very frustrated.
Everybody just saw it as this just like fun little aspirational period piece.
Yeah, none of the characters ever opened the locked door that said "Do not open," and so it was never really explored. They just lived their dramatic lives around it.
I can't tell if you're joking because I've never seen Downton Abbey.
No, it is. There is no horror element to it whatsoever.
Okay. Sorry.
They do randomly kill off one character, but it's because of behind the scenes actor contract drama.
Yeah. That's always going to happen on a show that runs like that. So I haven't finished this. I can't tell if it's longer than the previous ones, which I finished in two sessions, or if I've just gotten better to holding to the 2 hours a night schedule, when I play, but I'm excited to see the end.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Say that again.
No, that's it. I'm excited to see the end.
Cool. What blows my mind is looking on Wikipedia, they have 8 kind of planned and committed to. Of these games. So they're not even halfway through the Dark Pictures anthology.
I thought it was only 3, but maybe the first 2 went so well that they got renewed, quote unquote, by the publisher, maybe?
Yeah, we know Wikipedia can never be wrong, so.
Well, I know that, so in my head, I thought it was 3 that they had committed to. And then when this came out, you know, each of these has a trailer for the next one at the end. Like the next one is like a serial killer hunt, kind of 7 style thing. I forget the name of it. So I knew that there were at least 4, but if there are 8, you're like, yeah, shit, keep doing one a year. I kind of don't care if the seams are visible and if it's a little bit sloppy and, you know, et cetera. Like it's cool. These games are rare, and they're doing well enough that I want to keep coming back.
Yeah. I mean, a little rough edges is fine. That falls into the, smaller games with worse graphics made by better rested people.
Yeah.
Heuristic. So hopefully this is that, and this is sustainable for them.
I hope it's sustainable. Yeah. I have no idea about the working conditions there, but like, this is also, these come out and they're $30, you know?
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. So, you know, which feels about right for 5 hours of pretty linear game. It's interesting. Will from Everything to Guppy, he writes and reviews games for the AV Club. He was in the chat and he was describing that when he played and reviewed this, he played it multiplayer. And I had no idea how that worked in this. So if you're just playing it by yourself, the game puts you in the role of, you know, one person. If you're playing multiplayer, it's not like you trade off scenes, you know, where like, okay, I am playing this scene where you're playing as, you know, this particular character, and that is always the viewpoint for this. You can have the two players playing 2 people in an individual scene, deciding how to react to each other, which is fascinating to me.
Like that exponentially increases the dialogue that you have to do that. I have to imagine the majority of people are never going to see. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think the Old Republic did this a little bit, but there were definitely games that had almost this adversarial dialogue trees or like multiplayer dialogue trees kind of idea behind it. I'm trying to think of what the other game was, but yeah, that is ridiculously complex.
Yeah. And you think about that and you think, wow, that's wild that they managed to get one of those a year out. Like how much planning goes into that? How much recording? Yeah. Cool. Well, any questions about House of Ashes?
How does it end?
I have no idea. We'll learn this weekend. The other game that I've been playing, I'm going to describe it. This is the second game where it's like, okay, the premise of this is going to sound like a joke. I'm the person who in the recent past came on and said, hey, this game where you're mowing lawns is actually kind of engaging in its own way. This is going to sound like I'm being a jokester about a boring sounding concept and trying to sell you on it. But trust me, this is actually pretty cool. I played this, this came out today. It's on Xbox Game Pass. It is called Unpacking.
Don't do this to me, Cole.
What?
Do not do this to me.
what is this? What is this I'm doing to you?
Do not describe to me how a game about moving boxes is actually really fun.
So you're not moving the boxes. You're unpacking the boxes.
Well, that makes it better. Continue,
okay.
Please.
So there is more artistry to this than there is in like a blank simulator game. I would encourage both of you to go look at the Steam listing for this. This is published by Humble, and it's available, like I said, on Game Pass. I don't like at the current price, not knowing how long it is. I don't know that I would say the $20 is it's pretty slight. It's a really good case for Game Pass, let's say. But this is a beautiful pixel art game, where you are, basically playing as somebody who is unpacking boxes for this one young woman, through the different stages of her life. Okay. And you look at these rooms, kind of an isometric pixel art kind of perspective. You have the boxes and you open it up. And when you pull something out, you look at the environment and you say, this should go over here. This should go over here. And so on and so forth, figuring out the best place for things to go, and their proper place, right? Or places, you know, where it's suitable. So you're not like putting your yoga mat in the bathtub. Like that doesn't make any sense. You're doing this, first, like you begin in her childhood room, like, you know, when she first gets her own room in 1997, and you go, like up to, okay, here's her dorm. This is like the first time she moved into a house, with a bunch of other people her age. Here's her first boyfriend, and a bunch of like life, circumstances like that, unpacking sometimes the same object that she's been carrying with her, you know, from, kind of, life, you know, circumstance to life circumstance. And figuring out the place that it ought to go. And this is incredibly comforting. And it has a little bit of that Gone Home style, like storytelling through personal archaeology, kind of deal. Do you understand what I mean when I say those
I'm,
words?
I'm watching the videos on Steam right now, and this actually now I'm starting to understand.
Yeah.
There's like a little stuffed pink pig doll that apparently shows up in multiple of these stages, and it has more wear and tear on it.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is someone experienced the incredibly monotonous, you know, X simulator games and was like, you know what we need to spice this up? A walking simulator.
I mean, kind of, but no, it's not walking simulator. Like it's literally, I mean, there's an element of this that's it's a little bit like Paper Doll kind of thing. It's a little bit like The Sims. Like, you know, this scratches a very particular itch for me. I don't know how universal this is, but like, it's really, you know, moving is stressful for everybody. I fucking hate any upset to my routine. Always have. It makes me sick to my fucking stomach. Especially moving to a new place, or even just like being in a hotel and like bringing order to a strange space with familiar things is incredibly comforting, to me, you know.
There's something very special about the first time you set up a space and like the amount of thought that went into each different dorm room or apartment or house that I went into as I moved in.
Yeah.
It, incredible given how immediately it all gets messy and will never look nice again.
Yeah.
Your first move in is that opportunity.
Yeah, it's your opportunity to get it right, you know. And even if I've been in a place for a while, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, not move around an awful lot, just staying in places, you know, for at least 2 or 3 years, which is nice. But like even when I'm in a particular space, I rearrange things, and I like messing around with shelves and displaying this thing right here. It's very soothing to me to be an arranger and displayer, and this is a game that is just kind of entirely built around that. And you know, at first you're learning about this person, you know, like where you just you pull open a box and then you see like, oh, there's a dreidel here. This is a Jewish woman. And then like later on when she gets her first apartment, like you pull out, okay, she's, you know, moved up. She has her own place here. She has a menorah. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. You learn about the people that she's moving in with. She moves in with somebody who's obviously like a cosplayer. And when you're moving in like with people, you know, if you're moving in with like roommates, you can't move their stuff around. So you have to put your stuff in around the edges.
That's a very kind assumption.
Yeah.
I want like a stress meter that you can move their stuff to a certain extent, but each item has like a sentimental value in its space. So if you move too many things or move the wrong things, you get in trouble.
Yeah.
The expansion pack, neurotic roommates expansion pack.
Yeah, but like when she's moving in with her first boyfriend, you can just like tell the difference in like the kind and make of their things, and like it doesn't look right together, right? And you're trying to figure out a way to make it work. I don't know. Like, I might be making this bigger than it actually is, but it's just a really comforting game. I sat down, it was really hard to pull myself away from it to come here and talk. There's a certain amount of mechanical rigor to this too, because like I said, like things need to go with like things. And so there's kind of a sorting element to this. So like, okay, you know, her stuff in her workspace, you know, like you need your pencil cup up there. You need the computer up there. You know, stuff just can't just be put somewhere willy nilly. When you've emptied all of the boxes, it'll highlight everything that is out of its place. Right.
Is that a coal it can't, or is it a game? The game will tell you no on putting certain things places.
You have an extreme amount of latitude. Like if this is, you know, a knickknack, if it's a displayable or if it's a book or if it's a piece of media, you know, it's you put it up there however you want to. But like you don't want to have your shoes in the bathroom or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like
we handle shoes very differently.
I don't know. That was a weird example. It's because I'm looking at the slideshow on Steam. Let me think here. So it'll tell you, like, it'll highlight stuff, and it's also funny because you can tell like how stressful the packing experience was, because you know sometimes, you know, you pull out like, okay, this is all bedroom stuff, and it's like toothbrush, what are you doing in here? coffee maker, what? And it's like, oh yeah, this was hectic, like stuff just kind of went everywhere, so you have to like put it off to the side and move it over to a different room. Something that is especially impactful, and I don't want to reveal too much about it, because this is always kind of like meaningful about the character's kind of life circumstance. But like, there's some stuff where it's like it'll tell you like, no, this shouldn't go here. This isn't where this goes. And on one of them, it was in the first screen when you're, you know, it's 1997, so you assume this is like a 7-year-old girl or something like that. There's just something. It's like a little like notebook. And you think, okay, this will go on the shelf with the notebook. I'm like, no, okay, that doesn't go up there. It doesn't go with the other books. This doesn't go in the closet. Like, where does this go? Does it need to be set on the dresser, right? Like, is this, you know, like maybe this is a diary or something? It's a diary. Yeah. No, the diary goes in the drawer under the desk. Like, it needs to be out of view, but in a place where she'll write with it. Mm-hmm. And so,
you
like,
under the pillow with that, man.
No, it's a, there are some things you put under the pillow, but in this one, it goes under the desk. Like it goes in the drawer on the desk. Yeah.
I'm already having anxiety imagining that you unpack one of these rooms and you can't find your stuffed pig. Like just from hearing you talk about this game and seeing screenshots, I have developed an attachment to this damn stuffed pig, and I know it's not going to be in the boxes when I'm talking about it. Well, leave it behind.
I have no idea.
I just don't want to lose it because it's very special to me.
I have no idea. I'm in 2015 right now, so I assume I'm probably about, I've got a couple more places to go. I really hope that like the stuffed pig like goes in her kid's room or something like that at some point.
Yeah, don't lose the pig. I'm distraught.
You need to text me
to finish the game and tell me the pig is okay.
I can tell that we've had very different life experiences.
I mean, I don't know. Like I'm attached to my things, right? You know.
I get super nervous if I get attached to things.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the Sonic doll that I, you know, treasured as a small child that's up on a shelf. I've got all this stuff, and so yeah, this kind of continuity of thing. It scratches an itch for me. Nice. Shit, man. I'd had my eyeball on this, and I think that I mentioned it like in a at some point. People are like, yeah, that's ridiculous. Why would anybody play a game like that? I want to make a case. Like, if you have Game Pass and you have it on PC, I have no idea how this would work on like a console or whatever. This is really charming. Like, not only is the pixel art beautiful and the music is nice and pleasant and stuff, but it is telling a story in a really unique way to me. And
so I'm curious.
Yeah,
this is. I realize a little bit picking up the wrong part of that sentence, but why wouldn't it work maybe in a console? Like, this sounds like a game that doesn't actually have that much gameplay. I would assume it would work on anything.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense with a mouse. Maybe it would take it would work with a touch kind of thing, or maybe just if you're playing it on a console, you would you know, it would just like snap to particular places and you cycle through them.
Oh, okay. You know, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I remember doing like base building and Fallout kind of sucked on a console, so I could see that being the same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Command and Conquer on N64, I still have flashbacks.
Yeah. I have no idea if it's available on the console. They probably figured out a way to make it work. For me, it is close enough to playing The Sims that it was nice to be able to have a certain amount of precision, you know. And yeah, also, you end up getting a workflow. It's like, okay, like I'll empty the entire box onto the floor and then put the things in their place from the floor. Right? And it's nice to be able to drag it around quickly. At the speed of your thoughts. Nice. Yeah.
You know, you could just get a job literally doing this, like gigs.
It's stressful. It's stressful in real life, especially. Oh gosh, if it was somebody else, like this is nice because like it's nice and tidy, and it's like you're going through like a thing that was designed for you. You know, like if you end up doing it for somebody else, like in real life, this involves conversations about, is it time to throw this away? Do we want to keep this? Should this go to somebody else? That is too much for me.
We need to remove the inventory system from life. It's just slowing everything down.
Streamline that. Go from Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Any other questions about unpacking?
I weirdly could see this become a streamer game.
Yeah.
Like, judge people for where they put everything.
Oh yeah, no, just walk into somebody's kitchen. You know, you wouldn't say it out loud, but you're definitely thinking that's a bad place to put bowls. You know.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I have nothing so revelatory. I'll start with like really old stuff that I've gone back to.
Okay.
I had a friend who I was just hanging out with and was like, oh, we should play a game together. What are you doing right now? He's like, I mostly do ARAMs on League of Legend, or League of Legends. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, why not? I'll go back to League of Legends. Your reaction is correct.
What is an ARAM?
It stands for all random, all mid. And so typically League of Legends is played on a field with three different lanes to it in a big jungle area. And so there's a lot of like being in the right place at the right time strategy to it. ARAM is a single lane, no jungle area. It's just like one small section of the main map.
Okay.
And so you just run in a straight line and fight whoever you see. And there's a little more to it than that, because League of Legends is unfathomably deep.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it is a much simplified version. And then obviously the random part is the game chooses a character for you.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a way to play champions that you might not have unlocked in a free-to-play game.
Okay.
But you're completely at the whim of whoever gets rolled. And you have a certain number of rerolls. If you like absolutely hate a champion and will not play them, you can roll away from it. But I, you know, I don't know anything from anything in that game anymore. Not that I ever did before. So I just took what I was given. But man, I think it took me 8 games before I got a win. So,
Okay,
but I got one and I will never play again. So, going out on a high note, baby.
are you still trying to like get to their portal and attack it until it closes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one lane and there's 2 rows of turrets, an inhibitor, which if you destroy your enemy's inhibitor, your minions get bigger.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And then kind of a final area with 2 turrets and the big base that you're trying to destroy.
Does that just kind of end up being like a game of like tug of war? Where you're pushing back and forth on the front, or
yeah, except that people like tug of war.
it does. In you know, there's in the main League of Legends. I don't even know what they call the main mode. Is it just Wild Rift, maybe, or that's the name of the map?
I have no idea.
Someone is screaming at their headphones right now. But anyway, there's kind of the strategy level of okay, I don't think I can win this objective. I will go take another objective while they get this one, and there's kind of this trading back and forth. And like I said, you might have the advantage, but be out of position, and then you're spending all your time running to the right place to be instead of being there and using your advantage. So there's a lot to the game on that level. However, in this, it is just like I know the enemy is straight ahead. I know my objectives are straight ahead, and when I get there, your one strategic decision is: do I wait for my teammates or do I, go in with who's here? Mm-hmm. And so that really, do you have a numbers advantage, is the only major high level strategic decision you're making. Otherwise it is all team fighting and one-on-one Twitch play. And as I'm saying that, I'm realizing that isolates the parts of League of Legends that I'm worst at. So I don't know what I was thinking.
You were probably thinking that you could spend an evening playing a game with a friend.
Yeah, I did. And it was wonderful, even though we got our asses kicked. Like I said, we got our win, and I will never play again.
Did he hassle you about the ratio, or was it just
he's awesome. Yeah, he is. Nice. This guy is like the most accommodating, if I had to pick one person other than Ben to be my Sherpa through an experience, I would pick this guy.
Yeah. Ben would be tough.
The way I would put it.
Ben would be tough to beat.
Mm-hmm. The world's competition for League of Legends is going on now. I'm watching a lot of that, just cause it's interesting. Like it's fun to watch people be good at a game. We've talked about that before. Yeah, so, yeah. But I'm watching that. And then my news story, we'll talk about something coming out related to League of Legends. So there's just a lot of League of Legends in the air right now. And I got drawn in, to actually play as a part of that. And like you said, good spending time with my friend, not good for Dennis feeling like he's good at video games.
Yeah.
So that's League of Legends. The other game that I put a little bit of time into is called Space Lords.
Hmm. Oh yeah. I guess I did have another game I played.
Oh, okay. So so David and I have been talking about like, oh, maybe there's a multiplayer game we could do. And we looked at Space Lords. Whenever you want to play a game with someone, you always got to make sure like you've got it installed and then you're through the tutorials and you understand it well enough. Cause no one wants to spend the evening being like, wait, what the hell? Hold on. Wait, I gotta do this. You gotta do that. And that's always my beef with MMOs.
It's
like 15 hours before you can play with the person you want to play with. I kind of went in and got out that out of the way. David and I never actually connected to play the game. But my time was enough to know that Space Lords is not for me.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's really for anyone. It might be. The premise of the game is basically that it's Warframe, so a co-op shooter that has as much melee elements as shooting elements to it, but every character is a Mad Max villain instead of a ninja robot.
Okay.
And that's, that's down, like the Mad Maxianness goes down to they have an enemy called the War Boys, which are the War Boys. Mad Max, like it is.
Oh, so it is legally actionable. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is in space a little bit, so they got that going for them. And the game definitely has an attitude, by which I mean like the 90s cool kid stereotypical attitude to
Edgy. Yeah.
Edgy. There you go. Yes. Space lords, edge lords, maybe. I don't know. All I need to tell you is about the intro theme song for the game. Which is actually kind of a banger, you know.
It's a great song.
It's a wonderful song.
So did you not know? Is this the first time you've ever heard that song?
It's the first time I've ever heard that song. Was opening up this game, and yeah. all you need to know to understand this game at its deepest level is the main refrain for that game is just motherfucking space lords over and over again.
Okay.
So it's that kind of buck rock edgy
yeah.
And I like to think that they are self-aware in their camp. And all that, but so that that's all fun, that's all fine. The problem for me is that the game that it is on top of just felt really quickly that I had reached the depth of it. I played like 4 hours or something. Like, it was not a long time. It's a character shooter, so there's a cast of like 15 different characters that you can play, choose from as you're creating your team. Each character only has one weapon.
Okay.
And that like defines their class. So I played mostly as the girl with the shotgun. There's like sniper dude and that, all that. And then they have one unique ability. So the shotgun girl could like, I didn't understand how this connected to anything. She could double jump off of walls and then glide through the air.
Okay.
Which had a little bit of utility for flanking, maybe, I guess. But most of the time, I wanted to be like on the ground in front of people rather than kind of hovering above.
I mean, so it kind of seems like that doesn't put you at like a huge advantage with a shotgun.
Right. It made you feel vulnerable.
Yeah.
And maybe I was playing it wrong. Maybe other heroes do it better. I did not play long enough to find out.
Mm-hmm.
But the weapon plus the power felt like, that's what makes each character unique. And yet that felt like the de-emphasized part of the game.
Oh, weird.
Because the melee combat is hyper intense. And like you always have someone right up in your face. And even when I've got a shotgun, it is better for me to be using the punch option.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, yeah, it's just that, like that will kind of one or two hit kill an enemy. Basically, when you start hitting someone, it goes into almost like a cutscene kind of deal. Not a quick time event, but it starts a combo essentially that will result in the person being killed.
Okay.
And like that is the best way. Maybe my gun isn't powered up enough. I don't know. Like, it's a free to play game, so maybe I just have the bad starting weapons. But that is the best way, at least when I played, to kill enemies, is just run up to them, no matter who you are, because everyone has the same punchiness. Like, everyone's got the same melee stuff. Yeah. So for a part of the game that is that central, it was weird to me that is the one part of the game where the characters are not at all differentiated.
Okay. So like, it's not even like different ranges or different like melee weapons or styles. It's like, it mechanically the same. It is just different animations depending on.
Yeah. So the main mechanic that does exist, such as it is there's a rock, paper, scissors with, your three basic verbs at that range are punch, grapple, and dodge. And so it's a thing where, like, if someone's, basically initiates the grapple animation, your punches won't do anything to them.
Okay.
However, they're locked in an animation, so if you dodge, it's fairly easy to get around it. On the other hand, your punches have a fair amount of auto aim. So if someone's dodging, it's fairly easy to punch them.
Okay.
And so there is a rock, paper, scissors mechanic. I'm not defending this.
Yeah.
I'm saying like if one was going to defend it, that would be the argument.
Yeah, and there's probably a certain amount of like Nomi for it, where you're trying to anticipate how they're going to react and get around that. And both of you are kind of dancing around.
Well, because that's the other thing is this is a 4v1 PvP game.
Yeah, which I never really experienced. Like, I never figured out when there was another player on the other side. It always felt like waves of AI enemies.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, like, I couldn't tell that, like you said, there was ever another player, which I wondered if maybe that was just like, hey, they're, they don't have enough people playing. I watched some Let's Plays of when it first came out, and like, you know, the other player is playing, you know, one of the same characters you can choose from. Mm-hmm. And from what I saw, it seemed like that could, you know, pretty dramatically tip the scales, but it doesn't seem like that's the case when it's controlled by an AI.
Yeah, and so in I think I played 4 missions, something like that, and the first 3 were all bot missions. So my teammates were AI controlled. They were named Huey, Louie, and Dewey. So unless, and it was all the same character. So I appreciated that touch. And you know, those were fine. The 4th mission was with a real group of people. And by the way, what you're doing is, you know, a co-op shooter, like I said, got a Warframe feel to it. You're going to objectives that are set in front of you that might be reach a point, defend a point, or blow up a thing, you know, throw the switch to lower the barrier, like, and you're just moving through a level. There's nothing too crazy there. But, you know, so I play with these people and get all the way through to the end of the level, and the last objective is behind a barrier. And literally, you just need to shoot the barrier until it explodes, and then, you know, you're done. You hop on the escape ship, and you're out.
Okay.
And we had probably 3 minutes left. Like, the levels are on a timer. We had 3 minutes left until we were overrun, and we're at the barrier, and I am the only one shooting it. And I'm the newbie. Like, I can't imagine that everyone else there, like, I can't imagine that I knew more than everyone else there.
No, they were probably...
I'm shooting it.
They were probably trying to get kills or something like that.
I guess. But they did not succeed in doing that in a way that then allowed us to escape. And we failed, a 15-minute mission at the very end for no good reason. And that was my point where I was just like, all right, not worth. And it didn't even have the feel of like the Left 4 Dead big climactic wave at the end that is frantic. It's just like, guys, I'm like, you know, I felt like the only college student working on a group project.
Oh, geez.
Which just sucked. So yeah, it's got a lot of style. It's not my style. It's got gameplay. It's not good gameplay, but it is free. So it's got that going for it.
Yeah. Yeah. The food's not great, but the portions are amazing. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I tried a new thing. It was interesting. I won't continue trying it. And that's fine.
Nice.
So I feel like I had a much more positive experience with it.
Oh, yeah. Well, do it.
Although, I mean, still not, you know, earth shattering, but I would say, I think the case you would make for it is one, you know, it does have a storyline. So, you know, as you're going through these missions, you are, you know, trying to accomplish specific objectives and, you know, working your way through a thing. And that's fairly interesting. Mm. Likewise, the, you know, cutscenes, although super edgelordy, are very well done and do actually exist. Like, these are fully voiced, fully animated cutscenes.
It does kind of feel like the people making this game wanted to make an anime or wanted to do a show, and that the cutscenes got that level of love.
Right. And I would say for me, the edgelordiness for me, wrapped around to where all of the characters are like that all of the time in every single dialogue they give.
Yes, they never miss an opportunity to be that way.
Right. And to me, that reached the point to where, like, that became then kind of endearing and entertaining.
Fair enough, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's... Yeah, it's like, it is totally everything you're saying. Like, those are the things, I guess I would more classify it as, I think... It's one of those unfortunate things where I think there is a good game in it, particularly in, like, the world and the characters and, you know, some of the story. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it quite makes it there.
That makes me wonder if we had come to it and actually started the game together instead of doing the whole, like, well, we'll knock out the tutorial stuff separately, and we could have just, like, laughed at it together. I think that would have created a different setting. So maybe yeah, that was the missing ingredient, was, like, you know, you don't watch Rocky Horror Picture Show by yourself.
Right. And, like, there are some interesting things in that, for example, your characters are stated. Enemies are the humans. So, like, I have no idea where that's going, but that seems like it's going somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially because they all look pretty human.
Yeah.
Right. They look human with, like, post-apocalyptic bits either blown off or stabbed in.
Yeah.
So, yes. Did you get to the point where, like, you actually recruit someone from the other faction?
I got through the missions where you recruit the first two people. The first guy you jailbreak, and they have him in a stockade naked for some reason. It does not slow him down at all in terms of hurting people. And I guess he still had his gun with him. Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other person they make out is like this humanitarian aid worker. And they're like, the only, I'm going to mess this up, so David, you tell me how it actually was. But the way I understood it was, we want this humanitarian aid worker on our team, but she'll never join us because she's dedicated to her cause. So we just need to, like, ruin the village that she's working with so badly that there's nothing there for her to save, and then she'll work with us. Did I understand that correctly?
So what it is she's from, I think, Nairobi.
Okay. Mm.
And is basically sending remittances back to her village. Mm-hmm. And so her thing is altruistic, but altruistic in such a way that she's only in it for the money.
Got it.
And so what you do is basically go to the place she's supposed to be protecting and bust it up so she'll get fired.
Okay.
And so, like, at that point, the best way for her to make money is to join you because the other guys aren't going to hire her.
Okay.
And so, like, that is, you know, it's one of those things where, like, that's a interesting angle of a character that is specifically only in it for the money, but for a completely altruistic reason. Like, that's actually a fairly interesting character angle that I'm not sure I've seen much before.
And it just gets down to, but, oh, like, they're doing the right thing, and that's kind of what matters, but it's got the, you know, yeah.
Right. But, you know, again, it's not, not very well done.
You described it way better than I did. I did not follow that, that line of thinking, although that line of thinking does make sense.
Yeah, to be fair, that is a horrible plan. Like,
it's a monstrous thing to do. Yeah.
Also, like, apparently Nairobi exists.
Okay.
Well, humans exist, so.
Yeah, I mean, so. I guess.
A difference in humans and earthlings, though.
And I feel like one of the the shotgun lady that I played as has a maybe Australian, maybe just British accent. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. She has, like, the whole, whatever it's called, where it's the undercut, but you still have, like, sideburns.
I don't know from hairstyles.
Yeah, yes. But
it belongs on the Just Fuck My Shit Up Reddit, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I do like that the shotgun dude, they free him by playing EDM music, which he apparently despises, and so goes into a rage.
Okay, yeah, I did not understand that at all. Yeah, I got there with something with music. It really was that he just did not like the music that they were playing.
Right, yes, that was, like I said, I think maybe that's the problem, is in order to understand this game,
you have to
realize how stupid it is.
Right.
I was sitting there at that cutscene, I'm like, I missed something, because it seems like they just played music he didn't like, and that hulked him out, so he broke out of his restraints.
That is literally what happens.
If you went through a literal mission to get the stockade that this guy was being kept in, Why would you then need to make him break out of it?
Yeah.
And why would you do it by playing music? He doesn't. I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, this was this is definitely a game to play with someone while you can laugh at it together.
I mean, yeah, in that way, yeah. It kind of sounds a little bit like Army of Two.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, that's a great comparison. Yes, I could see that.
Yeah. Huh.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, there's probably a Pound the Rock interact button in there somewhere.
Oh, I'm
would
sure.
not be surprised at all. Motherfucking Space Lords.
I like the Saints Row games, so you know, glass houses and all that. That just having to be that as the theme song. I don't know. That seems like a bit much to me.
Well, to be fair, Space Lords was not the game's original title.
What was the
It was originally released as Raiders of the Broken Planet.
Okay. Probably to change for legal reasons, trademark.
I have no idea. So the Broken Planet is the planet you're apparently trying to keep the humans from invading. And your characters refer to themselves as the Raiders.
Okay.
Again, this is one of these games that in order to understand it, you need to understand how little it makes sense.
Okay.
Oh, Lord.
Weird.
So,
Space Lords.
Yeah, Space Lords. Play it, or maybe don't.
or just go listen to the theme song. I will post a link.
I mean, the theme song is pretty catchy.
It is pretty catchy. Yeah. I'm not going to deny it.
Huh. The thing it reminds me of is, did you ever see the, I guess it's a fan video, Space Asshole?
Yeah, no. That was done by the Idle Thumbs guys. They did Chris Remo, who went on to do music for Firewatch and then worked on Half-Life Alyx.
I'm afraid to Google that.
Yeah, no, he wrote this song for Idle Thumbs about the protagonist of Red Faction Guerrilla. Because they were just joking, like, in that game, you know, you're like, yeah, you're a revolutionary or whatever, but the majority of what you're doing in it as you're playing is you're being a space asshole. You know, you're just going around and hitting stuff with your big hammer and knocking it over and all of that. And see, so he wrote a song that was, you know, space asshole. And it, like when they reissued, Red Faction Guerrilla, THQ or whatever team, publishes that, whatever publisher does that, used Space Asshole as like the official trailer song for it, which is kind of neat.
That's wonderful.
Are we talking about the same thing, David?
Yeah. Yeah. No, okay. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what the theme song reminds me
of. Yeah. I just there's a when Syphil and Ollie came back, the sock puppet show from MTV, it had a short-lived revival on a YouTube channel, so some media company or whatever. They're doing game reviews, but the first episode that they came back, because they always do songs, they had a song that was just called Motherfucking Pie. And it's just like, I don't know, maybe I'm splitting hairs. That is incredibly charming to me because it's two sock puppets singing about how good motherfucking pie is. It's not even, it's not a euphemism. It's just that pie is good. Motherfucking pie.
It is.
Yeah.
Now I want pie.
Yeah. That's it's real, real catchy. Nice. Did you have anything else besides Space Lords and League of Legends, Dennis?
No, that is it.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people, and who recommended it to us? Who suggested it?
Yeah, this is special in from Rookie with a really fun question that got mm-hmm. a lot of good responses. So thank you, Rookie. The question is, we all experience games differently and value different aspects in different ways. What element of gaming is usually lost or wasted on you?
Yeah. And why don't we get started here? We have Roop, who nails it for me. This is my answer. Loot. I effing hate games where I get 1,000 different versions of the same thing with little or no difference. I'm looking at you, Borderlands, Assassin's Creed, Control, and the like. Less everything, which can be upgraded. Know every combination of those upgrades. Yeah. Yeah.
Does Assassin's Creed do that? I must have stopped playing before
the more
they got
recent
there.
Ones.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah. So especially like they started doing it in 3, where you were killing all the animals and taking their outsides. it definitely became a real kind of action RPG loot system in after the reboot, after they did Origins.
Yeah, they reined it in for Valhalla.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah,
I think part of it, though, also, those are probably the 3 games that have just about the worst loot systems of any games I've ever played.
Yeah, I can't speak to them in specifics.
I'm not saying either of you guys are wrong. I'm just saying, yeah. Those are especially bad instances of it.
Yeah, I'm not motivated. Diablo's loot cycle is not necessarily. I'm more interested in like moving things around on the inventory to make room than I am in like comparing. I just want to press a button that says, "Hey, this is the most efficacious group of things." I don't like comparing mm-hmm. things. Borderlands, that loot system doesn't speak to me. You know, getting a 0.23% damage increase versus a 0.20 and that being all the difference, it's not something I care for. It just doesn't work. Man.
I'm curious, do you like the Fallout games where it's, you know, not just like random ass loot, but like I'm going to collect all this scrap and build crazy things?
Yeah, I like that. I'm really excited. We're doing Fallout 4 as our as the winter RPG on WoW, and I'm getting real into like I'm fine with it in service of crafting because like that brings a lot of interest to doing the scavenging, and that plays into the theme of the game really well. Mm-hmm. You know, like just when I break into a place, I'm not necessarily like looking to see if they have a cool TV there or whatever. I'm looking to see if they've got like springs and glue and stuff. You know, like it brings a little bit more interest to the clutter to me.
So I'm curious.
You just sparked an idea. We need to make Breaking and Entering Simulator.
I mean,
exists.
Yeah, Thief Simulator. It's really good. Thief Simulator
what
rules.
Yeah, Thief Simulator. Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. It's really good.
So I realize this is off the topic of trying to get through the multiplayer, but did you play Fallout 4 before, or did you?
I did
kind of stuck in my mind that maybe you bounced off it.
I didn't bounce off of it for any reason other than I like did the intro and then I got distracted by homework.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is I think that's, I know a lot of people that bounced off it. And I think though that there's a lot of story beats elements of it you'll actually really like, so I'm really excited to see how some of them strike you.
Yeah I'm going in with like right-sized expectations as well. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not, you know, like this game has been out for a number of years where I can know exactly what's going to be here and mm-hmm. Adjust my feelings accordingly. Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Greg say?
Greg says achievements. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy them. Some of the hidden ones can be fun to stumble across. It also shows the world what you've done with the game. But a lot of them are badly used, such as too easy to get, or for no-brainer things as simple as starting the game. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've played a game that had that.
Yep.
And I don't care about 100% getting all of them. While I try to do everything in the game that has value, I don't go out of my way to 100% the game, so that aspect is wasted also.
Yeah, there's definitely a gamer psychographic who really loves platinuming things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think for me, my stance, I would probably consider myself in kind of the same category as Greg. I think it's very much the right, quote unquote, in my opinion, way to do achievements is to guide you towards doing interesting things that you might not have otherwise done, mm-hmm. not to make you do things that are only interesting because you get an achievement.
Yeah. Yeah. Into the Breach is really good for that because its achievements are built into the game. It's not just something that is, part of the Chrome of the operating system. and it is specifically there to get you to be adventurous and try different combinations of stuff. Like, that's a good example of achievements done really well.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Alex say?
Alex says, I accidentally lost my patience with AAA storytelling in 2018 when I played through God of War, Spider-Man, and Red Dead Redemption 2 back to back to back.
Oh, that's a lot of overproduced cutscenes.
As you would have to be playing that nonstop 24 hours a day to be finished with them by today's date. I don't understand how you did that.
I mean, Red Dead Redemption is the longer one on that. But I mean, God of War and Spider-Man, those are both good games, but doing them back to back, I would need a buffer. Yeah. David writes, multiplayer with very rare exceptions like Rocket League, I just don't care about multiplayer aspects of a game or straight up multiplayer games because it's so hard to write so hard to organize my friends across time zones to play consistently. The very idea of playing a whole game co-op is pretty much a non-starter. Asynchronous multiplayer all the way.
I mean, that's basically what you're doing now. This is asynchronous multiplayer.
It is, yeah. This is not real time. You sent this in 11 hours ago. Is when you sent this, yeah.
And if it's news to you, seek help.
I'm the same way. Multiplayer stresses me out. It needs to be with somebody like Ben, who can counterbalance my impatience when technical stuff doesn't work. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. David, what does Tim say?
Tim says, character customization, specifically the character design options that have no effect on gameplay. Please don't make me spend my time worrying if my character's nose is too big for his face. I trust game designers will make characters that look cool.
Presets, baby.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the ideal for this, in my opinion, was... City of Heroes, where they had tons of different options, but they were all named with things that made it clear, like, if you choose this option, this is what your character will look like.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you could just choose, like, heroic, or, you know, weird, or silly, yeah, and trust that your character was going to look that way.
Nice. Oh,
tell me, David, what do you think a hero looks like, huh? Why don't you reduce that down for me?
Didn't expect this to be a trap, did you? let's see here. Dennis, what does Callum say?
Mm-hmm. Callum, very shortly, says length. My gaming time is pretty limited, so if a game is 100 plus hours, it is more of a negative.
Yeah, yeah.
Agree.
I feel that. Chris says, the Naughty Dog style of shooting an entire planet worth of dudes in all their games. as fun and good as their stories can be, I get some serious fatigue at the endless combat. Yep, give me less combat that is more intense and higher stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Would be my preference.
Or it's almost like a puzzle game. Like, even when it's a straight action game, I want them to use the puzzle game heuristic, mm-hmm, of every combat is teaching or testing something new.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it just don't make it rote execution. Have there be like a gimmick to the individual encounters. Otherwise, mm-hmm, it's just the same thing over and over. Yeah. David, what does Eli say?
Eli says, I've actually fixed mine. I don't wear earplugs where... I didn't wear earplugs when I was in high school drumline, so for years, most aspects of sound design didn't make it into my evaluation of a game. I'm not deaf, I just that a lot of noise gets lost in the mix for me. But a couple months back, I bought a decent headset so I could use a mic, and holy cow, have headphones made a difference. I noticed more music and sound cues while I game, and it rules.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah. Not bad at all.
Man, I was thinking the other day about one of the major regrets I have is just not being more protective of my hearing early in life. Like, I would throw on over-ear headphones and turn the sound all the way up because I thought that was the right way to listen to music. And it's just, mm-hmm, stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm the other way around. Having grown up mostly deaf until I was, what, like 5?
Mm-hmm.
I tend to be super protective of my hearing.
Yeah. I mean, kind of the same boat.
Good on you.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean I wasn't stupid, you know, driving around in cars, playing the music a little bit too loud, but yeah, you know. It is weirdly a finite resource. You can only hear so many loud sounds. I'm really
hoping for stem cells or something.
It'd be pretty nice, wouldn't it? Not like to extend life, but to extend quality of life. That'd be nice.
I mean, I'd be cool with both.
No, you know, as long as it came with both.
Also a tail.
For balance, you know, for holding extra spatulas when you're cooking, it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's really just for a cosplay idea. I don't feel like making it, so
let's see here. That was David. Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack says, with several truly rare exceptions, achievements. I cannot understand this form of dopamine squirt. I don't think achievements are even necessarily a game developer telling you how to enjoy or play a game. To me, it's more of a strange cultural signifier to your gamer peers relating to how much time you spent playing a certain game in a certain way, and that is lost on me entirely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got so anxious about people peering over my achievements for games, especially ones that I covered for shows, that I turned off the ability for people to see them. Not because I have anything to, yeah. Oh God. Yeah. You can make it. So it's friends only. You can make it so nobody but me sees this.
See, I really like the main thing I like for achievements is I really like that Steam tells you what percentage of people have, gotten each achievement.
I like that too.
Just to get insight into like what are the patterns people play.
Mm-hmm. Where do people like did I go past when most people do this? If this is just progression, how many people had this rare thing happen to them? Stuff like that.
Right. Exactly.
Am I truly elite? By which I mean have less than 1,337 people accomplished this.
Yes. Yeah. It's good to know. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Alexander says, crafting. It baffles me that people think it's fun, apparently, yeah, for a big scary monster to drop a sharp rock and a couple of sticks that you have to glue into a sword. Just have the monster drop a sword. Give me something compelling, not backpack garbage. Please do not gate progression behind picking up debris in the woods. I can do that in real life. Man, that trend has really harshed my buzz when it comes to games in the last 10 years or so.
See, I feel like Monster Hunter is really on this thing because, like, it doesn't even have the monster drop a sword. It's just you take the monster and swing it as your sword.
I mean,
well, this goes back to loot, the first answer of
tonight. Yeah. If there is bad or gratuitous crafting, it will really pollute the loot pool. It's a miracle that I said that without stumbling. Pollute the loot pool.
What this makes me think of is, and I don't know if Minecraft has changed since, but Minecraft not only had the BS loot and crafting systems, but you had to like guess at the right formation of blocks to make a thing.
I haven't played that game in so many years, since like maybe like 2014 or so. So
it's college for me.
Yeah. So I don't know that I would have, maybe they've added, the recipes, but I think it is so accepted that you play that with a wiki open anyway.
Huh. Yeah. But like, I don't know. You want to play a wiki open for more interesting things than how to make a wooden sword.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll play with the wiki open to like do redstone stuff. Like that's fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Moonborn say?
Moonborn says, cosmetic only rewards. I guess I'm lucky that seems to be the main focus of the MTX gambling economy, because being able to play as Tracer wearing a puke green frog hat or whatever does nothing for me. I like fashion, but fashion is all a reward provides. Yawn.
I am offended, sir. It is Lucio that has the puke green frog hat. Three people got that joke. I appreciate everyone who did.
What is MTX?
Dennis?
I don't know.
I don't know. I did a search for MTX game, and I see the motocross game, which maybe microtransaction.
I took it to mean like the, oh, there you go, microtransaction.
Yeah, yeah. It's a stretch, but it works. let's see here. Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, all the voice acting and a lot of music is lost on me. I read very quickly and prefer to skip ahead to the next line rather than wait for the actor to say what I just read. I figure it saves me 2 to 3 hours per game minimum. As far as music goes, I usually don't even notice it. And when I do, I don't seem to appreciate it quite as much as everyone else since I'm tone deaf. Excuse me. Anything past the NES area with its obvious bleeps and bloops is just kind of meh to me. Reading other people's experiences with video game music last week on the Slack was a real outside looking in moment for me.
And I'll follow up with Gwen, who has a similar one. Gwen says, sound effects fully. I play most games on mute, smiley face. One time my friend asked me why I was stuck on a puzzle in Jack 2, and I told him because I couldn't figure out the pattern. I was supposed to be listening to a sound that I had turned off. Yeah.
I mean, I have several games that I just listen to podcasts while I play. So I totally get this.
Oh, I do it for games where I really shouldn't, where I should be paying attention. And I'm stopping and I'm starting and pausing and playing to pay attention to different things. It's a wreck. I've already said mine. The loot systems are not motivating to me. Any kind of like random drop kind of stuff is more of a hindrance to my enjoyment than anything else. David, how about you?
Ah, man, I've got a lot of genres I strongly dislike. I don't know about specific mechanics, though. I mean, I guess permadeath, but that seems kind of like cheating.
No, I mean, it's a factor in a lot of games, especially ones that have been released in the last 10 years or so. Yeah, I would say permadeath. That is a perfectly reasonable answer. Dennis, how about you?
So if we're gonna go the mechanics route, like since permadeath opened the door, I will say any kind of timer in a game. I understand franticness and time pressure as an interesting thing, but when a game just literally slaps a timer up on top of the screen for me, that I just don't get that. Like, that is not fun to me.
No.
Oh, I actually know mine. Boss fights in Soulsborne games.
I gotcha.
I think for me, the big thing is, I feel like the boss fights are, to me, what, like, meter is in poetry. They need to be there to kind of provide the texture and that sort of thing, but that's not really why you're there.
Okay.
And the problem is, it seems like a lot of the quote-unquote Soulsborne genre has decided that boss fights are the point of the genre.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you haven't played Sekiro, but that is definitely a huge case with that.
Having a boss rush mode, right?
I mean, yeah. Which is
to me, strange. To me, the Soulsborne games are all about the dungeon crawling. Like, that's why I loved the Chalice dungeons.
Oh, wow.
I will say, I think the boss fights and the dungeon crawling test distinctly different things. But outside of the aforementioned boss rush mode, I think they complement each other. Like, you have to do the dungeon crawl to get to the boss. And part of the reason the resource management and strategic thinking of the dungeon crawl feels so important or is such an interesting strategic challenge is because you know you have to preserve resources for the boss rush. So or the boss fight. So I kind of see, even if you don't enjoy the boss fights themselves, they are necessary to create the tension within the dungeon crawl.
Yeah. Totally. And to be fair, I like the puzzle bosses and I like the kind of duels. So like I do like the the fake phantom invasions.
Man,
Artorias, hands down, the best boss fight in the series.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name? Skeleton with a crown. Worst boss fight.
Volnir. Yeah, Volnir is not good. Nobody likes Volnir. Good question, Rookie. Thank you for suggesting it. It was thought provoking. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompt go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. David, what's happening in the world of Ocarina of Time speed runs?
Yeah, so a speedrunner, one sec, I'm trying to look up the game. Apparently goes by Save State. Beat The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time in, I believe, under 5 minutes. Just under 4 minutes, actually. which is half the time of the current world record.
Okay.
However, here's the catch. He was playing the demo version of Ocarina of Time that was provided with Super Smash Bros. Brawl. So apparently the way this works is a bunch of the characters in Brawl, you can play demo versions of their games, but you're capped at 5 minutes.
Wait, so it has the full ROM in there?
Apparently, yes.
That's,
jeez,
baffling.
However, the kind of interesting thing is it's sort of yes, sort of no. Apparently, it starts you off at the Spirit Temple with the hookshot and bombs and some of the other things already unlocked.
Okay, that makes sense. So you can see like the basis for all their moves in the game.
Right, exactly. And from what I understand, from a speedrunning standpoint, that kind of cuts off all of the, like, oh, I have, you know, like, in most speedruns, there's the beginning portion of, like, I have to do this drudgery to set up my run before I get to the part where, like,
yeah,
you know, the real run starts.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that kind of cuts that out.
Okay. Huh. And then he does all of the usual, I'm assuming he, then they do all of the usual, just rolling into a particular seam and changing between these two weapons to memory glitch into this to get to the credits. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of the core of this. The other thing that's kind of interesting, that this article from Polygon goes into is, the thing of, you know, strictly speaking, you know, this isn't the new world record because it's not the same game.
Yeah, maybe its own category.
But
yeah,
it discusses the fact that, you know, within the speedrunner community, there is, you know, often for a given game, you know, specific, I guess, categories that will be, you know, beating the game in a specific way.
Yeah, any percent, all bosses, like in Dark Souls, it'd be like, do you do the Sen's Fortress skip or not? Stuff like that.
Right, and so discussing whether this might be considered either one of those, or maybe it could be considered, you know, a completely separate game that someone might speedrun.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, pulling back a little bit of, like, how might this be thought of within the broader community of speedrunning.
Yeah. I mean, from the outside, the speedrunning community seems real constructive. I don't know if it's just because the most of what I see is awesome games done quick, and that is a uniquely supportive kind of environment. Kind of seems like they're going to figure this out and come to something that'll make sense for everybody. Yeah.
I just love the fact that the entire game is included there, though.
I had no idea. I played Brawl. I never messed around in the menu, I guess.
Yeah. It is a very, like, programmy thing. It's like the easiest way to do this is just brute force, put the whole thing in there.
Yep. Yeah.
That is the best way to do this crazy thing.
Just to load it with this particular save state. And there you go. We have an emulator on the Wii. Like, it works. But we have the virtual console. Mm-hmm. Huh. I've got one, speaking of emulation. To a certain degree. We were talking about Souls stuff earlier, so that makes a little bit of sense too. There's a Bloodborne remake coming out at the end of January. This is specifically a version of Bloodborne that is being made by a fan that is taking the game back to the PlayStation 1. level of graphical fidelity, etc., kind of going in line with you know, the bumper crop, let's say, of PS1 style horror games. Demakes have been around for a while. People doing like Atari or NES demakes of popular games like Silent Hill 2, Final Fantasy 7, etc. This looks interesting and it feels very ambitious. It's not doing the entire game, but it's doing kind of the opening of the game up through the boss fights against both Father Gascoigne and the Cleric Beast. Which is interesting. It's two different bosses, but they're very different boss fights. And I'm curious to see how it's going to how they're going to do that.
I wonder with this sort of thing, you know, how much of the graphics is the issue versus all of the game interactions going on under the hood is the issue. Like, you know, obviously there's the challenge of making things look simple enough to render.
Mm-hmm.
But then I wonder if as things have advanced the way, like certainly how open and large levels are is a challenge.
Yeah.
And then like the way enemies are tracked or enemy AI works or anything mm-hmm. like that. I wonder which of those is the greater challenge.
Yeah. I mean, getting it to feel like a PlayStation 1 game without being as like floaty and kind of bullshit as a 3D PlayStation 1 game.
Usually was. That just means worse. So.
Yeah, just worse and bad. Like the trailer looks cool. It looks like they're doing a good job with it, but it's, you know, kind of it's like the Shovel Knight question. How much of this is a faithful recreation? How much of this is making the idealized version of what you remember this being like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that has a release date. It's a real cool, fan project. And I hope that neither From nor Sony scupper it by doing kind of like legal cease and desist kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's literally in the trailers. The title is literally Bloodborne PSX.
Yes.
So I feel like there's trouble coming.
Yeah. So maybe it will survive a couple of months.
Yeah. Put the TM on Bloodborne, so maybe that counts for something.
What were you going to say, David?
So this isn't really relevant, but I'm just curious. So those are probably by far, I think, my two least favorite boss fights in that game. That and maybe ROM is kind of bullshit. How does the community tend to view those boss fights?
Gascoigne is pretty well regarded because it is the dual style, and the transformation is interesting. Also, like, it is a cool experience story-wise if you're going through it early on. If you manage to get the young girl's music box to give you the advantage, Cleric Beast. Sure. I think that generally when people talk about it, they either say that it's boring, that it's confusing, or that it is way too hard for where you can encounter it. Also, finding out that Cleric Beast is optional is a bit of a bummer.
I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah, you don't have to defeat the Cleric Beast. It gets you some badges that lets you buy some of the other starting items, the ones that you didn't pick up, but it is Cleric Beast is not strictly necessary to beat.
Oh yeah, because that was just about the first thing I did in the game.
Oh yeah, no, coming to it with any kind of Souls logic in your head makes you think, okay, we're gonna go up to that bridge toward the thing that I hear screaming. And no, it's not necessarily the case. Gascoigne is the first, it's the critical path.
It's so funny. The Souls community has kind of inoculated themselves to the difficulty spike as a warning thing that the Souls games are known for.
Oh yeah.
Because with speedrunning and everything like that, there is nothing in these games that people consider too daunting to not be possibly the way you're supposed to go anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so yeah. That was like one of the coolest aha design things about when I first experienced Dark Souls was the whole skeleton path and everything like that. And that can't happen anymore because the community has gotten so good at these games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can get through everything. It's fine. Dennis,
this reminds me how much I want a new Bloodborne or a new Real From game.
It's coming soon. Elden Ring.
We'll see. After Sekiro, I'm not holding my breath.
Things that I have seen have made me optimistic.
Hmm.
Yeah. I signed up for the network test. We'll see if I get in. And I will not be able to say anything about it probably. So, Dennis, do you have a story?
Yeah. So, did I not post this? Let me see.
I don't believe you did.
I did not. I've had it sitting up on my screen the whole time. Yeah. So I even alluded to it saying that my story related to League of Legends, that is because League of Legends is launching an animated series on Netflix.
Okay.
So it's called Arcane, which is right up there with Magic Legends in terms of bland names.
Yeah. Oh, it's the name of a character, right?
What's that?
It's the name of a character, right?
Oh, if it is, I don't know that character, which is entirely possible. So that maybe it centers that around two
most generic character name ever.
Yeah. The name is really Arcane. Well, what is it? You got a whole Who's on First routine there. I think it's about they're the main characters, at least, are two sisters. Did not know these characters were sisters in the lore, but hey, here we are. Which is Vi and Jinx. And these are, you know, obviously both characters that you can play in the game. It centers around them being pulled in different directions, one towards hero, one towards villain, and story ensues.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I found really interesting about this is one, it's just always interesting to see a game crossing over into other mediums. And it happens with movies a lot. I feel like it happens with TV series less. And certainly this is probably the highest profile example of it happening so far. It's on Netflix, which is cool to see it on a streaming platform. And they are also being very accommodating for people who want to live stream it. So when it premieres on the 6th of November, they are allowing people to stream it and have people watch, and are doing a bunch of things to support that, including like a premiere launch event and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
From all the trouble Twitch gets into for people streaming content that they shouldn't, here is a series launching and being like, no, have everyone who may or may not have Netflix on your channel and stream this with them, which is a very savvy move in general, but doubly so because it is a League of Legends show.
Yeah. No, I think that is that's real good. Get watch parties together. It's good for creators. Probably there are people who otherwise wouldn't watch it. Not even like if they didn't have Netflix or whatever, but like mm-hmm. even if they had it, might not be something that they're into. That wasn't like communal kind of thing. Yeah, it seems smart. Also, yeah. Seems real tricky for Riot to negotiate that with Netflix to say, yes, the rights are fine. Did call off the dogs, please, for the love of God.
Streaming platforms have to know it's headed in this direction anyway, but
they're going to fight it. Everybody's going to fight it.
The other thing, it's not so much fight it as it is write it into the ground, right? We know it's going away. We just want to make as much money as possible before it goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of like the planet.
Yeah, exactly. So the other just interesting thought about this is League of Legends has a very distinct art style out of necessity because this is a game that's been around for umpteen years and needs to run on a toaster. And it's really interesting to see the way that they are translating that to an animated series where you can make things look as shiny and flashy as you can. But they haven't just gone on like, we're going to make hyper realistic versions of these characters. It still has that almost concept art feel.
Mm-hmm.
The Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Kind of feel to it. And I like that style. I hope that they lean into that, but we will see.
Yeah, limited animation, high quality asset kind of stuff can work out really well.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
So I'll be curious to see. I'll try it. I'll watch the first episode of anything when it comes out on November 6th. I think that is also when is the Worlds competition? That's the big League of Legends Super Bowl is right in that time window.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be a legendy kind of weekend there.
Yeah, big kind of event week for them.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
the credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. It's been a good time. At least I've had a good time. I hope you've had a good time.
Especially since Ben's not here. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you said that. You said it real loud. Yeah. Like you made a point to wait for a pause and everything. So if you'd like to help us out, you know what to do. You can tell your friends, go to Facebook and like the page there, subscribe or leave a rating or review in your podcast directory of choice. Save the date. Duck Stream is happening on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of December. East, loosely defined as East, Ben's included in that. But the East people are going to have the day shifts, and the schedule on that's going to come up here as we get a little bit closer to the event. But going to be doing a charity stream there to raise money for Transactive. I'm trying to think.
Should we talk about what we are considering doing, or should we wait a little bit to talk about that?
Let's wait a little bit to talk about it. Because cool. I would like to announce a couple of things. There's the one thing that is in the chat right now.
There's lots of cool, interesting things in the work. Be excited.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. So am I forgetting anything?
Nope.
Okay. All right. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Instagram at Deck of Wonders.
I've been David Mindsmith. You can find me hibernating because it's getting cold.
It definitely is. Real chilly today.
We haven't even hit daylight savings time yet. I know. You guys, I'm scared.
It's bleak. It's so bleak. And stick around for some titles. Okay. I have two. I have A Bad Place to Put Bowls and Sort of Like the Planet. That was a fun one.
Very good.
What do you have, Dennis?
I have three. I have A Ship Powered by Yato. Okay. I have The Neurotic Roommates expansion.
Okay.
And I've got Nobody Likes Volnir.
Oh, it's like Zoidberg. David?
So you know the rule. I had a end boss this time, which means I have no titles.
Is that the pattern? Okay. The one that got last was sort of like the planet.
Yeah, sure.
We good on that?
I like that. It is a title that will only make sense in context.
Yes. And also it's bleak, which is good.
we're two in a row now. Was last week nothing is allowed to die? Yes, yep. It is. What was the one before that? Hold on a second. Now we got a No Human Should Skitter. That's kind of bleak.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean that's more making things less bleak. If humans are skittering, there's bad stuff about.
You know.
But if it's skittering more of like a whoop 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 way, then that's fun. It's all, yeah, what sound effect goes with the skitter?
What?
It's all about what sound effect goes with the skitter.
Yeah, you know, it's just chiton, right? Like rushing up against each other.
Chiton bad.
Yeah, hissing, just book lungs expelling. Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.